It's Martin Malloy with McMalloy and Tony Martin.
And today, Olympic week begins on Martin Malloy as we investigate Cathy Watgate and find out what makes our Olympic officials tick. That's officials. And also today, the Tears of a Princess, alternatives to gun crimping, and the new Martin Malloy V-chip. Pete Smith takes it for a test drive. We'll kick off an Olympic week of radio gladiators, fire up the brand new Martin Malloy love machine, which could bag you a new car, and joining us live, the ever dapper Mr. Dave Graney. Yes, it's all coming up on the program. John Howard was disappointed to discover is not reversible. Martin Malloy. Beamer baby, good afternoon, Australia, and welcome to what we're pathetically trying to pass off as Olympic week. Right around the nation here on Martin Malloy with myself, Tony Martin, and this bloke here, a man who's been inspired by John Howard's address to the citizens rally against guns over the weekend, especially that shot of him standing behind the podium with the letters C-R-A-G on it. And he spent all day trying to book him to address the citizens rally against persecution next weekend. Mick Malloy.
Yeah, read me like a book, don't you, Tony Martin?
What have you got for us, Mickey? I know the Olympics haven't started yet, but already a whiff of Olympic controversy?
Absolutely. I'm a bit cranky today, Tone, so I might get a job as a sporting official at some stage. Listen to this. Australian cycling champion Cathy Watt, this is if you haven't heard already, says her Atlanta dream has become a nightmare because of yesterday's decision by national cycling officials to omit her from the track team.
I see.
Watt was overlooked for the individual pursuit, the event she won a silver medal in at the Barcelona Olympics, with a spot going to Lucy Tyler Sharman. Cathy's manager said she was really distressed and vowed they would lodge an immediate appeal this morning with the International Court for Arbitration in Sport. Okay. Now, Tone, there's something scary about sporting officials in this country, and I don't know why it is. You see it a lot in amateur sport, and it usually involves people who spend their entire life busting the gap. Whether it involves running 100 k's a day, swimming laps of a pool from sparrow's fart till dusk, or someone who's just peddling like the clappers morning, noon and night, it involves someone like that being told by some wanker they can blow it out their ass, their chances of representing their country is buckley's and none.
Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's how it works. Oh, it's as simple as that. You know what I mean? And it's always got that "I told you so" or "you've only got yourself to blame" kind of tone to it.
I think
that's why they become sporting officials, so they can break really bad news to really good athletes. Oh, hello, Cathy. How are you? Yes, how's that silver medal you got in Barcelona looking on the mantelpiece these days? Good? Yes, happy to hear it, because come Atlanta, you get nothing. You hear me? Nothing. That's how they break it. There's a few fairly cranky blokes ruling the roost in sports officialdom, and I'd like to know why. Are we talking sour grapes? Are we talking chip on the old shoulder? Are they taken out of the cryogenic chamber every 4 years, thawed and told to make a total prick of themselves before going back into the freezer? I've run out of breath. What's the problem?
No Olympics for you.
No Olympics for me. Swab me, drug test me. There'll be any number of reasons why I can't go. What's the problem? Remember Dawn Fraser?
Yeah.
Won a bag of gold, letting off steam, pinched a flag, never allowed to swim again.
Oh, no.
Tried to chop her legs off, drained every pool in her neighbourhood, stood out the front of her house chucking rocks at her windows for months.
Oh,
they
yeah.
just didn't like it.
No,
and
no.
Cathy Watt, what's the reason there? Pretty much the same. I don't know. Wouldn't attend a training session. Refused to race with a basket on her bike. Wouldn't reroute her training course to deliver morning paper to cycling coach's house. Who knows? Who cares? As long as our sporting officials are enforcing the rules.
Yes.
It's all about rules, Tone. Mm. See this photo in the paper today of
what's,
Cathy?
What's that?
Earlier today, emerging from a meeting with cycling officials.
Oh, yeah.
See that head of shock white hair?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was brown when she went in.
Never tear us apart. That's in excess here at Martin Malloy and Mick. Let's put the Olympics to one side just for a moment. Have you seen these pictures on the front of the paper today? Pictures of Princess Di on the blub. Princess Diana sobbed her heart out in public over the weekend as she struggled to come to terms with her divorce. Reporting on her appearance in Kensington Gardens where she was taking a jog, News of the World royal editor Clive Goodman reports at one point she paused, began crying and wailed out uncontrollably at the top of her voice, "Why? Now, Clive says this shows she was clearly struggling with the terms of her divorce and therefore must be on the verge of a nervous breakdown. Mm. She just couldn't seem to concentrate on her run, says Clive. Now, the same article also reveals that while jogging, she was pursued by 7 motorbikes and 2 cars, all chockers with members of the British press. So isn't there just a vague possibility that why was directed at them? How's that a motorcade chasing her through the park? She started crying and the bloke with the News of the World immediately concludes, well, she's clearly struggling to come to terms with her divorce and she's on the verge of a complete breakdown. Mind you, it does seem like unusual behaviour. It does seem like an unusual reaction from someone who's just scored a $30 million divorce settlement plus $800,000 a year. You know, if that was me, I wouldn't be in the park turning on the waterworks. This is what you'd be hearing from me. I think that's pretty much my reaction. That's what it'd be. I'd be running up to them British journos one at a time, just going the punch, decking them out right there on the lawn and writing them a massive out-of-court settlement check, each of them on the spot, handing it over and racing off, giggling like a maniac with one of them five-day woodies we've been reading about in the papers. Yes, I'd be completely cock-a-hoop. But then again, Diana was angling for 70 mil, so maybe the 30's a bit of a letdown. You know, she'll have to start rationing her sessions down at the backdoor bilge clinic. And also, there's some more bad news for Di. Have you read about this, Mickey?
No.
As part of the terms of the settlement, she has to relinquish the title Her Royal Highness.
Right.
Okay, we probably knew that was coming, but did you know about this bit? She also, she's got to hand the badge in, fair enough, no longer on the VIP list.
I hear you.
But this also means that she will now be obliged to curtsy whenever she meets other members of the royal family, including her own sons, William and Harry. Oh, this will be the best news them kids have had in a long time. How much fun's that going to be? Mum, yes, William, aren't you forgetting something, Mum? Oh, sorry, quick curtsy. There you go, Your Highness. Can I go down to time zone with me, mates? Yes, of course you can, Your Majesty. Great, see ya. One more thing. Yes, son, I mean Your Lordship. Don't forget the curtsy, Mum. Of course, there you go. It could go on all day.
Never ending.
Just get her into a curtsying frenzy.
Up and down, up and down like a yo-yo.
Won't know if she's coming or curtsying. And what about the Queen? You think she's not going to be taking advantage of the situation? She's a stickler for protocol.
Oh, yeah.
She'll be popping round to Di's place at all hours of the night for a couple of sneaky curtsies. All of a sudden, she'll be really keen to run into Di in public. She'll have Di reduced to a curtsying wreck within 3 months. That's why Di was crying. She's facing a lifetime of non-stop curtsying. Within a year, she'll be calling up the Queen Mum and just begging for the number of her hip replacement bloke.
Radio Gladiators.
Of love, that's Eclipse. Does that mean the 80s are coming back in force, Mickey?
Let's hope not.
Coming into work tomorrow with me spiky Brian Mannix hair happening. And look, I love that is as good a reminder as any that the love machine, it's getting cranked up for the very first time in the next hour on Martin Malloy.
Excuse me, celebrity coming through. Please, no photographs. I said no photographs. God's sake. Hi, Pete Smith here. Did you notice that act of gratuitous violence just then? Sadly, an all too frequent occurrence on the program these days. Certainly wouldn't have happened in my day. Oh, no, back in the 60s, when we were doing IMT, if we wanted to, drop a load of bricks on Gra-Gra's head, we'd require written permission from the Prime Minister, who just happened to be a very good friend of mine. In fact, I recall him saying to me one day, Pete, you're such an excellent broadcaster, I'm going to recommend you for a knighthood, just as soon as I get back from this big swim. Anyway, not to worry, because I'm here to demonstrate the new Martin Malloy V-Chip. That's right, the new Martin Malloy V-Chip. V-Chip. It's quite simple. V-Chip!
Sorry!
Here's how it works. If yours is one of the receivers fitted with the V-Chip, you'll no longer have to endure the... Just one moment, please. sorry. That's precisely the kind of moment you'll now be able to avoid, thanks to this remarkable new technology. Now, whenever something offensive or unsavory is about to happen, your receiver will simply switch to some tasteful and soothing music from my personal collection. Mick, if you could help me demonstrate.
Sure, Pete. Just bend over, will you?
Okay. The Martin Malloy V-Chip. All right!
Sorry.
Also eliminates offensive language. Observe. Mick, I have to say you're a complete...
Oh, really, Pete? Well, cop...
Well, I think that's enough demonstrating for one day. And now, it's back to the program.
It's not time to make it...
Phillips, naked and sacred as always. Rug up, young lady, you'll catch your death. This is Martin Malloy, where Radio Gladiators is imminent. And is it going to be Olympic Gladiators this week, Mickey?
It'll be loosely tied to the Olympics one way or another, Tone.
Okay.
Well, that's enough.
Yeah.
That's plenty.
Is it? So we just have to say that and suddenly it's Olympic
week. It's Olympic week.
All right, sold.
Keep repeating the phrase, Tone.
Okay. And what about the Love Machine? We're turning that on in the next hour.
I'm looking forward to that.
Something new and something different. And we're putting on the little hats with Love Doctor written on them. And we're here to help you with your love relationships and basically problems with the downstairs department should the topic arise. Mm-hmm. Also, in the next hour, a bloke who I'm sure has a love machine at his house, Dave Graney, will be joining us. Always a treat when Dave drops by.
Yep.
You know, we always like to see what he's wearing
to begin with. It's always a talking point.
That's right. Well, usually we just say to him, I want to see what Dave Graney's wearing. Get him in on the show. Did you see him on HG and Roy Saturday night wearing, how would you describe it?
I don't know. It was it velvet?
It was some kind of crushed linen. Crushed pink velvet with a sort of outrageous hairstyle happening in a pretty good moustache.
And what looked like one of John Howard's protective bulletproof jackets on underneath.
It was, when I was a kid, my parents used to love a show called Jason King. He was a suave detective who wore a double-breasted kind of velvet suit with a sort of ruffly kind of bits on the sleeves. He always had a martini in his hand. That was the look Dave was aiming for and achieving on Saturday night. He'll be with us in the next hour. And do we have time to talk guns briefly? Is it time? Yes,
go
it is.
On.
Time for a quick crimp watch. Yes, keeping you up to date with what's going on in the world of crimping. And John Howard addressed the Crag rally at the Gold Coast Arts Centres over the weekend. Do we know if he was wearing a bulletproof vest this time?
Didn't see any outline under the jacket.
No, I think he's adopted the less controversial technique of just using Tim Fisher as a human shield. Everyone seems comfortable with that idea.
Sure.
The PM has given gun crimping the thumbs down, as we know, after a report by ballistic experts concluded that crimping could be reversed by anyone with, quote, sufficient time, motivation, skills and resources, i.e. bloke and gimpy with a shed full of tools. But the Army investigation did suggest one way to thwart the crimp reverses. Super glue. Yes, basically pouring super glue into the magazines. Isn't that fantastic? That's an idea there.
Very high tech.
Throwing up in the paper today. Who came up with that? The Army's highly resourced practical jokes unit. We suggest pouring super glue down their gun barrel, stretching glad wrap across their toilet seats, shaving their eyebrows off while they're asleep, and leaving fake vomits all over Ian McNiven's doorstep. Of course, Ian McNiven's promised 10,000 supporters failed to materialise at the PM's rally. I'm sure they were all out in the back with a shed.
Tooling up.
And making sure they got plenty of super glue remover handy. But in fact, only about 30 gun owners showed up, including a highly vocal man with an American accent identifying himself as Chuck Brooks, former radio talk show host, movie reviewer, and Texan. who believes that all Australians should be carrying guns for personal protection. Protection against him, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be part of that. What are they called? The sinister, shadowy American right-wing group that are trying to infiltrate Australia. What are they called? The LaRouche.
The LaRouche.
Organisation. Not to be confused, of course, with the equally sinister LaBouche organisation, whose plan is to render Australians impotent with their repetitive dance rhythms and constant use of the phrase... Must buy guns. Must move to northern Queensland. Must say hello to Ian McNevin. But in related news, Communications Minister Richard Alston yesterday cast doubt on push by the states to clamp down on top-rating television cartoons, which were considered to be too violent. The move could affect shows such as The Simpsons. Now, firstly, aren't Channel 10 already censoring The Simpsons?
Yes.
I think they've already taken the initiative themselves. If you've ever had someone from New Zealand send you an episode of The Simo and copped a look at the uncensored versions of, Homer on the ambulance trolley falling down that cliff, or McBain bursting out of the ice sculpture, or any number of uncut itchy and scratchies, you'll know that the episodes are already being crimped for Australia. The Crimpsons, I call it, in my own funny way. But aren't we taking the eye off the ball here, Mickey? I mean, we've got a gun problem in this country. What happens? At least three states are kicking and squirming to prevent any further restrictions on gun ownership, but they're mad keen falling over each other to make sure TV cartoons are cut to buggery. Yes, we've done some studies and discovered that guns don't kill people. Tiny cartoon mice with enormous polo mallets and super strength soda siphons kill people. Maybe when we wake up one day and read about a bloke running amok at a supermarket with an anvil, a safe, a giant mouse trap, and a bottle of Acme Extra Hot Tabasco sauce, then we'll finally take action against those evil purveyors of death and bloodshed, William Mad Dog Hanna and Joseph Chopper Barbera.
This is Martin Molloy.
Talk, talk, talk.
Brought to you by absolutely nobody.
That's the Bodines, closer to free here at Martin Molloy, where it's time to kick off a very special Olympic week of...
Radio Gladiators, your chance to...
Very sheepish when you mentioned our very special Olympic week.
Well, what are we doing today that's so special and Olympic, Mickey?
Well, it's not specifically confined to the Olympics or Olympians, but it's something pretty specific to sporting people, I suppose, and we're talking superstitions.
Oh, superstitions.
Now, there was an article recently in a paper that outlined a whole range of sportsmen and the superstitions that they take into every sporting encounter, and this would include putting the left sock on before you put the right sock on, and then after the game, taking the right sock off before you put the take the left sock off, running onto the ground. There's certain players will make sure they're the fifth player to run onto the ground week after week. If they don't, they can't play. Their legs turn to jelly and they're no good.
I know a lot of cricketers always have to put their hair on in a certain order.
Absolutely.
Or that's bad luck for them.
Or else they just won't play at all. And this goes on. But when that's our starting point. And in fact, it's not even specific to sportsmen.
What you're saying is the Olympic wheels have already fallen off.
We didn't get halfway through our first gladiators till we discarded the whole Olympic challenge week.
Okay, what we're doing.
Are you happy? I've said it. Are you happy now?
Tell us.
I tried to tell him not to say, let's not mention it's the Olympic week.
Yeah.
No, we're committed now. We were committed for 10 seconds.
You know why you said that to me, Mickey?
Because you're superstitious.
I'm superstitious. See? That's what we're looking for today. Quirky little bits of superstitious behaviour that you get up to that maybe your mum or your dad get up to, that somebody in your family, your boss does. Mm-hmm. And we've all got them. I know I drive around my car. I drive around. It's got my lucky grills on the back. I call them my lucky grills.
What are your lucky grills?
Well, you know them awful, ugly, damn sort of hexagonal beehive-shaped kind of grill plasticky things you have on the back windscreen?
Louver.
I've got them on. They look shocking. But I'm not taking them off because they're lucky. They're lucky grills.
They're lucky. They're protecting you.
That's right.
Okay, here's something I do. Whenever I go into an open loaf of bread, I never take the first slice.
Oh, no.
I always go past the first slice and into the body of the loaf to extract that first piece of bread.
Superstition, but practical
there's
at the same time.
There's no reason for doing it.
Do we have any superstitions attached to this program? I know I'm always a bit uneasy if we don't have a Bryan Adams song scheduled, so consequently, you know, we've been pretty lucky to date.
Yep. No problem there.
What else? I know, for example, I like to get a word in the show. I always choose a word, and I say, I'm going to get this word into the show. I think you can guess today it's been
Crimping.
Last week it was sphagnum. Try and get it into the show. It's a kind of good luck deal.
Here's a superstition of mine that I've been running with for some time now.
Yeah.
And it's whenever I'm in bed in the morning, my alarm goes off.
Right.
I never, ever get straight out of bed.
Don't you?
I always like to use at least two or three snooze alarms before I get out. For, I don't know, for some strange feeling I've got that maybe I might be punctual or something like that.
You know, sensible. You don't want to take any chances, Mick.
I don't mess with it.
No, you don't want to.
I have never, I can honestly say, I have never gotten out of bed when that alarm goes first.
You don't want to mix with old dame voodoo because it could get you into trouble. And you've stuck to that rule as long as I've known you. What about, I've got a weird kind of, I think this is probably more compulsive behaviour. I'm fanatical about taking price stickers off things. I'll take them off even before I get to the counter. I've got to get rid of the price. I don't know what it is.
I've seen you swapping them.
That's right. but that's kind of not really superstition. That's more practical.
Oh, okay.
But if I'm on a tram and bloke next to me's got a magazine, it's still got the price sticker, I have to take it off. And, you know, it gets me in a lot of trouble. I don't know what's brought this on. When I was a child, I must have been attacked by somebody armed with a pricing gun. That's the only thing I can think of.
What about fruit? Do you take the stickers off fruit?
Oh, yeah. Take a sticker. If it hasn't got stickers on it, I'll put them on, then take them off. Mm. That's how superstitious I am. And I know a lot of people have these. Alan Bond, he's very superstitious. He won't leave the house unless, unless the judge says he can, basically. But that's what we're looking for. Little quirky bits of superstitious behaviour that you or someone you know get up to, and it has to be real. We're not looking for phony ones. And what have we got in the way of a prize pack today? Listen to this, people. It's classic British comedy. Thanks to our friends at Roadshow Entertainment and ABC Video, we've got a classic British comedy video pack.
What's in it, Tane?
You've got your Not the 9 o'clock News. Now, there's a show which I hadn't seen for a long time, and I was quite surprised and pleased to see that it's a lot better than I remember.
It holds up.
With Rowan Atkinson and people like that. A couple of videos of that. You've got just released those ones. We've got French and Saunders. You've got the very best of the young ones. And, of course, Blackadder. The third, very fine third series of Blackadder.
Lovely.
And despite this, we haven't got any faulty towers, I'm afraid. I'm not sure what's going on there. And you'll be disappointed to learn no George and Mildred in there.
Oh, how can you have a UK comedy pack without George and Mildred? Next, you'll be telling me there's no man about the house. I'm
afraid not.
Oh, it's a joke. It's a sham.
It's not because we chose it that
porridge.
Way.
No porridge. I'm out of here.
It's because we were too superstitious to include them. Call us now with your quirky little bits of superstitious behaviour. 1-800-657-657. That's the real McCoy. Another night here at Martin Molloy. It's another Radio Gladiators. It's kind of an Olympics Radio Gladiators because we've been reading about some of the quirky superstitions that our Olympic athletes have. Having to put their socks on in a certain way, that kind of a thing. And we're asking, do you have anything similar yourself? Who have we got? Introduce the superstitious people.
Linda, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Linda, what have you got for us in the way of a superstition?
Well, I actually put toothpaste between my toes before a tennis final. Not an ordinary game, just a real
Now, is this one you might be watching, or does it have to be one you're playing in?
No, it has to be one I'm playing in.
So you play pennant tennis or whatever
it is? Just ordinary. Every day, Friday singles.
And how did that come about?
Well, the kids had just come home from camp and they'd all played a trick on each other and they'd put toothpaste. And that was a way to keep the Nyorabora away, you see.
Right.
And they came home and did it to me and I was nervous and I thought, oh shit, Tinny, bad luck. And
I
went.
It could have been a lot worse.
My socks don't smell anymore.
It could have been a lot worse. You could be having to, shave off your eyebrows and stick shaving cream down your underpants.
No thanks. But I do wear the same knickers every game, every final.
Well, we'll have to get someone around to suck your toes.
No thanks.
Be fresh as.
And Linda, do you remember to floss the toes as well? That's always important.
No, just the toenails.
I think your foot bloke will be telling you that. Can't remember the proper word for the foot bloke. Okay, thanks very much, Linda. Now we've got Jamie. Jamie, what's your superstition?
Every time my dad buys a scratch it, he waves it madly around his head.
Right.
And it matters what's really on the ticket.
Oh, I see. So he's acting like he's won even before he's cracked it open.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And does it work?
Oh, don't think so. Not that I've heard of.
But he keeps doing it.
Yeah.
So chances are it's totally unlucky because he's never won.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So he's never had cause to actually scratch it, then wave it wildly above his head.
No, he's never thought of that at all.
So he's doing it in the wrong order.
Yeah.
He's jumping the gun. Final, fantastic! Bye,
the drinks are on me. Oh, no.
Okay, does he wave the teapot around three times as well? Is he one of those kind of blokes?
No, he's not that dangerous.
Okay. All right, Jamie.
All right, thanks, Jamie. Next, we've got Kelly. Kelly, tell us your story.
Well, my brother, his basketball team won the preliminary finals.
Right.
So he decided he'd keep his jocks on for 2 weeks until the grand final.
And so it took 2 weeks for his luck to run out, as it were. Was he? How bad did he smell after the 2 weeks?
I didn't go near him.
Right, don't go
was
near
that
him.
A little superstition of yours? Yeah. When your brother hasn't changed his jocks for 2 weeks, you like to keep a fair distance away?
Very far.
Yeah, I wouldn't go near him. He's pretty lucky today.
He should go to someone when he finally takes them off and get his underpants red. Have you ever done that? It's like a tea leaf reading.
I just hope that's why... Lucky Grills isn't called that. But anyway, thanks, Kelly. That's pretty darn superstitious.
I like it a lot.
All right, Nick's next. Are you with us, Nick?
I sure am. How are you, guys?
Not bad. Tell us about your superstition.
My superstition is 9, funny enough, and the number 9. Everything to do with number 9 is I'm superstitious with.
Right. The number 9. So you buy things...
I might be nailing a piece of wood. I might put seven nails in it, and I'll put an extra 2 in just to put the 9... Just to get to the 9th one.
Right, and so you would you drink 9 beers of an evening, that kind of thing? Would
and
you watch
more, yeah.
Just Channel... You don't work for Channel 9, do you, Nick? It's not one of these
no.
deals. Not at all?
No, not yet.
And why is this 9? How did that become the number of your choice?
I don't know. Apparently a friend of mine was in numerology and they did my numbers for me for some reason.
Oh,
and it worked
I
out
see.
That number 9 happens to be my number. And I just figured out all my life I've worn a number 9 footy jersey, a number 9 soccer jersey.
Right.
I've played number 9 in hockey.
Yeah.
And everything's mm-hmm. been associated with number 9. So 9, it's become compulsive, actually.
So I bet you love that Beatles song, the one where the bloke just says number 9 over and over again. You know, that revolution number 9. That'd be always on the turntable around in your joint, wouldn't it?
Did you have to bring that up now? I'm going to go out and buy it.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for playing, Nick. That's
and
pretty...
you think he'll be our winner today?
9! Okay. Thank you, Nick. Have we got Peter? Peter, are you there?
Yeah, how you going there, guys?
Yeah, good, mate. Tell us
mate,
a bit.
I've had this shocking habit. I've had it all my life, or not all my life, since my teenage years.
Yeah.
Every time I get a pack of the Winnie Blues, I check under the flap and I turn up the smoke that I count from the left-hand side according to the number that's under the flap.
Oh,
lucky cigarette, eh, Pete?
The lucky cigarette trick. And do you think that reverses the health damage it might be causing?
Mate, I'm too lucky for that.
Too lucky.
I'd be devastated, I think, if I'd stopped doing it, because then all the bad luck would happen.
Yeah. But you know that you know there's quite a responsibility that goes with the lucky cigarette, because once you've nominated it and you've turned it upside down, if anyone thereafter was, say, to ask you for a cigarette and grabs your lucky cigarette, you know that is bad luck.
That is really bad, like, especially when my wife lights the wrong end of it.
Oh, yes. Oh,
it sort of flames up.
And it explodes in her face. And everyone has to go to the hospital. That's a bit of bad luck.
Oh, yes, those lucky cigarettes, they've been responsible for earthquakes and disasters. I understand that. Cyclone Bertha.
Bertha.
Lucky cigarettes to blame.
Cyclone Bertha is a chain smoker.
All right. Thanks, Peter. Next, we've got Lee. Lee, what do you do that's lucky?
Ever since I've been a little girl, I was told that every time you drive or you walk past a cemetery, you're supposed to stick your finger in your belly button and hold it there until you drive past it or until you've gone past the cemetery.
All right.
They tell me that it makes you live longer.
Yeah, so you take one hand off the wheel and just whop it in the belly button. Who told you that one?
I'm not sure. I can't remember, but I've just remembered it ever since I've been a little girl.
And if you're driving or doing something like that, can someone else do it for you? Can someone else put their finger in your belly button?
Well, I'm not sure. Every time we're driving past and my boyfriend's driving, I make him do it.
Oh,
it's compulsive.
Okay.
I make him do it.
Right. Well, you better be listening when we fire up the love machine in the next hour.
Because God knows that cemetery is full of people who were told but didn't listen.
I get the feeling that as you're driving past the cemetery, all the dead people are just having a good hard cack to themselves. Okay, but that's a beauty. Thanks, Lee. And what about, and hello to the boyfriend, by the way. Mm. And Tracy, are you with us?
I'm here.
Tracy, tell us about, is it something you do or something?
No, a friend of mine knew someone who was on their way to soccer one day.
Yep.
And their little boy had to go to the toilet.
Right.
And they won the game.
Yep.
So every other game that they went to, they had to stop and make the little boy go to the toilet.
And what if he didn't want to go?
Oh, they just tried to make him.
They'd just be standing there playing recordings of running water at him. Come on, we don't want to win. missed the final.
Dear, oh dear. So that became the ritual.
It became the ritual, yes.
And were they just loading him up with liquids before the drive?
Probably.
And was the kid made aware of this? Did he know his role in this?
I'm sure he did.
Yes. Well, as I was talking about on the show, a dog was extremely lucky out the front of our doorstep last week. And we've been rolling about in luck for the last 7 days. You know, that's a pretty good one. Is that our winner?
I think it is.
Okay, Tracy. You've got yourself the British comedy video pack.
Oh, thank you very much.
It's chockers with Blackadder and Young Ones and Not the 9 o'clock News.
And as you're watching it, Trace, you got to put your finger in your belly button.
Oh, okay.
No, it's much funnier.
And race out to the toilet in between tapes. It'll make it even better. Thanks very much. Thanks for taking part in Radio Gladiators. Mm-hmm. Thanks to everybody. As I mentioned, the Love Machine is on the way, and we'll be speaking very soon to Dave Graney.
This is Martin Molloy, brought to you by Absolutely Nobody.
And in this hour, the Love Machine is open for business. Mick wheels out the Martin Molloy rocker recliner. Stand back, kiddies. And next up, well, get yourself smartened up and make yourself comfy. It's Dave Graney. It's the second hour of Martin Molloy, and we don't do this often, but we've tidied up the studio for our next guest. This bloke, we always look forward to his visits for no other reason than to check out the threads. You may have clocked his outrageous ensemble on Saturday night's Club Buggery, where he took part in a fantastic and spectacular musical duel with Ian Turpie. He's just back from England with his band, The Coral Snakes, and he's doubtless coming to your town soon. He is the always swank Dave Graney. Dave, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure, thanks, Ben.
Are you comfortable?
Okay.
Yeah. Can we get you a cocktail?
No, thank you.
Are you happy to proceed? Do you want to take cravat off? Or...
It's fine.
It's the Mr. Peacock look from Are You Being Served?
Oh, really?
I don't know that's a compliment to Dave.
I meant it as such, and I'm sure Dave took it that way.
Which one was he? Was he a stud?
Oh, yeah. Couldn't keep his pants on. That Mrs. Slocum was his!
Now, Dave, just for the benefit of the listeners, describe your outfit today.
I'm into a kind of a George Lazenby mode at the moment.
Of course you are. And I must say, we've talked about this before with you. Yeah. Some people can pull off these fashion looks. Some people can't. We're radio announcers. We can't get away with nothing unless it's got the station logo on it.
Yes.
How do you think people, if they want to be more interesting in their fashions, how do you go about it? Is it all about bluff?
You got to... look at clothes. Like some people ingest drugs to alter their view of the world, you know? But look at clothes like drugs is a good way.
So you've come in here high as a kite.
Yes. Let it all hang out is what I say.
And is this going to lead to harder clothes? That's what I want to know. Do you find yourself as a bit of a fashion role model? Because I often see photos of you in magazines and I say, oh, he's not going to get away with that. He's never going to get away with that. And then a couple of weeks later, I'll notice everybody's got them on.
That's right. I got a moustache at the moment. I mean, everybody's going to have him soon.
That's not Baby John's moustache, I hope, because, you know, his has gone missing.
I know, it's a terrible fashion move on his part at this time. He got the sack as soon as he shaved it off.
I see, and that made you think, well, better get one on.
Winner, loser.
Could we see you hosting Wheel of Fortune, Dave?
Well, I always liked that show because he mentioned me on air once, you know, as music that he liked. So I really thought that was cool to be in Baby John's boudoir, you know, his kind of part
of
the world.
True? Baby John gets home from a hard day at Grundy's and slips a bit of Coral Snakes
on. That's right, yeah.
A bit of soft and sexy sound.
That's right.
Does he use it to relax?
I've met some guys in show business, and Keith Potka came up to me one day, and he had this most beautiful white suit on with a George Hamilton-esque tan, and... And he said, my wife introduced me to your music, and I just think it's wonderful. And I just, I've arrived, you know. Get Nathan Cavalieri out of my future, you know. I've died and gone to heaven.
So you're saying we could soon be seeing an album called The Soft and Sexy Sound of Keith Potka.
Cool. Yes.
Now, Dave, you've been taking your soft and sexy sound around the world. You've just come back from England. Although, am I correct in saying they haven't had that album? They're an album behind over there?
Yeah, they had Night of the Wolverine put out there in May, and the soft and sexy sound comes out in September.
And how is the sound taking off around the world? Do you find wherever you go, people are just thinking soft and sexy now?
I hope so. People have a lot of fun when they come into our atmosphere, because it's not like I invite them over to my house and it's like I give them a lecture on the problems of the world. It's like they come into my pad and I say, hell, sit down, get on the beanbag, and spray him with some perfume and give him a martini and everybody's happy. So.
I've got your press release here, and you've received some fantastic descriptions while you were in England as an ambassador for Australian music, of course. They're describing you as a 1970s porn king and the only funky Australian ever. Now, how do you take those? Are those mantles you take on comfortably?
It's good. They call me a pimp and stuff like that. And in the British press, they're all positive things, you know. When I figured that out, you know, it's like when Jerry Lee Lewis was in trouble in Britain in the late 50s, they always used to tell him to keep his pecker up, and he used to get up to thump them because they're talking around his 12-year-old wife, you know. Anyway, they call me stuff like that, and I think then I select the clothes, you know. I would like to be what people want me to be. So.
Right. Have you thought of getting a child bride? I mean, it sounds like a good look for you.
No, those were simpler times.
What about getting in a fight, Dave? I'm just trying. Would you ever get in a fight? Have you ever been in a fight?
Yeah, years ago. I punched a kid in primary school just to see if it made that sound. It did in the movies, but it didn't, so I went off it after that.
Never gave it another shot.
I got punched myself, but it didn't make the sound either.
No.
It
wasn't a soft and sexy sound?
Not at all. Now, speaking of soft and sexy sounds, Dave, I want you to tell us about the bloke who's supporting you on your current tour. Is his name Frank Bennett, or is it Tony Sinatra?
Oh, he's got a bit of an identity problem. He's got a single out called I'm a Creep, and he's a Sinatra, a distant member of the Sinatra family,
I think.
But,
yeah. And it's the Radiohead song I'm a Creep?
Yeah, I was telling him to do it, you're a creep, you know, because Sinatra wouldn't go for angst.
No,
you're a creep, you're a weirdo. What the hell are you doing here?
Dave, I've got a theory about Frank Sinatra that he didn't know what a lot of the words he was singing meant. There's one song, I think it's called Come Dance With Me, where he's throwing the word terpsichore around. He's going, like some terpsichore. And I'm sure he had no idea. He's going, afterwards, what's terpsichore? It's dancing, Frank, just sing it, just get on with it.
He did it with such authority that nobody argued. You know?
He's
a mead guy.
He's a chairman. Okay, well, let's have a listen to, I think it's the single has Frank Bennett written onto it, and let's have a listen to another kind of soft and sexy sound. This is Creep.
Whenever your phone could look you in the eye, you're just like an angel. Skin makes me cry. You float like a feather in a beautiful world. So very special. I wish I was special.
I'm a creep, I'm a weirdo, what?
That was Creep. Of course it was, as played by Frank Bennett, who's currently touring in support of Dave Graney and the Coral Snakes, who's with us today. Now, Dave, there seems to be a bit of a phenomenon going on in music at the moment. It's a trend. People are coming out in support of a kind of music which you've been supporting for quite some time, and they're calling it lounge music, cocktail, jazz, 50s, 60s. Mm. What do you make of this? I hope it's not just going to be a fad that lasts a couple of weeks and then people are on to the next thing.
I think it will be a fad for a couple of weeks and then people will leave it, because it's kind of... I've been to a few clubs that specialise in it, and it's annoying to be in a room full of people who are into things that's so bad it's good.
And, it's not
very hip after a while.
It's fun for 5 minutes.
There's
nothing at the bottom. And what kind of records would we find if we were to pop around to your place and check out the record selector?
I listen to a lot of jazz, Tupac's latest CD, All Eyes On Me, is sensational record of the year, I think. And I listen to a lot of rap and hip-hop and... a lot of psychedelic American music of the 60s and jazz. Nothing much else.
Now, you've mentioned vinyl before on the program. You're still a big supporter of vinyl?
Yeah, when I can get it, yeah.
Yeah. Because I know around here, whenever we want to use some vinyl music, we have to go and find the stylus. There's only one stylus on the station, Excalibur. Yeah. And they have to bring it out in a special case. But I haven't thrown away my vinyl record. It's a big moment, I think, when you say, I'm not going to be a vinyl man anymore. I'm going to move over to CD. I can't bring myself have to part with my old vinyl records.
No. It's made for rolling joints on, and can't do that on CD covers.
No. Now, Dave, let's get back to the present. Are you thinking of writing a book? Because you're a man who loves using words creatively. Yeah. Has anyone come to you and said, when are you going to write the great Australian novel?
It becomes attractive when you think that's a way to really, really get cashed up.
And
money comes to you. Like, Robert D. Piedomenico, who's the clown from cricket, Max Walker, all those guys do it.
So you think you might have a book of sporting anecdotes in your day?
A book of rock anecdotes
That'd be a real snooze,
Have you got a lot of gossip in your day? Are you someone who collects dirt?
A couple of years ago I saw the Bono character from one of the Melbourne Tribute bands. Dry as a Bono or the Rattle and Hum, walking through an airport with a girl with his arm around her.
You're joking.
So he's, whether she knew whether he was the real guy or not, I don't know.
And that sort of thing goes on in the rock business.
Yes.
Oh, that's a disgrace.
Misrepresentation.
Well, he's taking advantage of his position there.
I think so, yes.
Now, we've talked about cover bands with you before, and you've saluted the Great Doors cover band on the Soft and Sexy Sound, but is there a Dave Graney cover band? To your knowledge, is anyone out there trying to copy you?
I want to do that myself sometime in the future. That gig's for me, waiting for me in a couple of years.
Just show up in a slightly wrong version of your own clothing.
That's right,
slightly wrong moustache.
That's right.
Someone's phone's going.
I think it's yours,
Dave. Is that
yours,
Dave? This could be anybody.
Okay, people, here comes that exclusive we've been waiting for. Dave's reaching into his very smart jacket pocket, I might point out.
Can you tell him I'm taking my shoe off?
And look at that beautiful jacket from Just For You Men Fashions, I'm sure. And who's this going to be on the phone? It'll be the bloke from the U2 cover band.
It's stopped.
Oh! We may never know.
That could be a competition. Who called Dave Graney?
Who called Dave Graney tomorrow on Martin Malloy? Dave, what exactly can people expect on the current tour? Is it a schizophrenic tour? Is it Soft and Sexy? Is it Wolverine? Yeah. Is it a bit of both? What is it?
Well, I kind of come to the stage where I just want to let it all hang out and do what I want and... I've always tried to straighten my act out a bit, because the rock scene is pretty conservative. But I've come to believe that I live in a mirror image of the universe as it is.
Right.
And everything you see is the opposite. So I'm just going to act according to all those rules.
Okay.
And what I'm doing now, people mightn't think it's apparently very successful, but in an alternate universe, I am God.
Okay.
So.
Well, if
are we big in that universe too, Dave? Let us be big in your alternative universe.
Well, if you'd like to sign up for Dave Graney's alternative universe, July 20th is your next gig. Did you know that, Dave?
It is. Oh, cool.
Write that down. You'll need that information. And that's, of course, at the Metro in Sydney with Rebecca's Empire. Thanks for joining us today, Dave Graney.
It's a pleasure.
here at Martin Malloy, and I'm sure Dave Graney will be wearing one of them when he comes in next. Thanks today for dropping by.
Yep.
And don't forget, Dave's album Soft and Sexy Sound has been out for quite some time now. Dave and the Coral Snakes, but you can still get it down the shops. Also, that song we played in the middle there, Frank Bennett and his Orchestra Royale. Creep, that's out now. It's a single. CD single, of course it is. Thanks very much to Dan, the music director, for suggesting we play that. I know we slag him off a fair bit on the show, but thumbs up for that one.
Pull the right rein.
And, Mickey, while we're talking soft and sexy,
it's time to fire up the Martin Malloy Love Machine. As you know, listeners, love can be a fickle mistress. But Mick and Tony have the technology to tame her. It's called the Love Machine, and it's chockers with the good stuff. Every day, the Love Machine spews out another challenge to test your knowledge and expertise in the field of love, relationships, and good old-fashioned doing the bizzo. If you can successfully rise to the Love Machine's challenge, you'll win tickets and a CD soundtrack to the new Australian film everybody's talking about, Love and Other Catastrophes. Plus, you'll go into the draw for a brand new Volkswagen Golf CL hatchback, valued at $27,000. Now, if that doesn't get the juices flowing, nothing will. Okay, love doctors, crank it up. And remember, if the Love Machine's rocking, don't bother knocking.
Thanks very much, MC Pete Smith. And what a fabulous prize.
It's fantastic.
You're going into the draw.
There's your Love Machine.
Exactly. The Volkswagen Golf worth $27,000. And, of course, you're getting tickets and the CD soundtrack to Love and Other Catastrophes. It's a new Australian film. We're going to check it out tomorrow and we'll have a full report on the show. Apparently it's all right, which it may surprise many people, having just been informed earlier in this sentence that it's an Australian film.
Correct.
But apparently it's tops and we're going to have a look at it tomorrow. And the Love and Other Catastrophes team have turned on this car. They've turned on this fabulous prize. And all we have to do is turn on the Love Machine. It's pretty simple. It's just going to be some kind of challenge. It's like Barrel of Pork. Remember Barrel of Pork?
Yeah, way back when.
But it's Barrel of Love. And we've got the Love Machine set up. Nobody's even touched it. People are too scared to even look at the bloody thing in here.
I saw Gracie trying to tongue kiss it earlier today.
Really?
Yep. Had to pull him off it.
Okay.
His tongue was stuck on the end. You know, get out of there, you.
Mickey, you've got the safety equipment on. I think it's going to have to be up to you to turn on the Love Machine. Give it a boot.
Stand back.
We got it together.
Here it comes. Okay, all right, and what's coming out of the machine? Well, Mickey, it's a simple phrase. It's lover's tiffs.
Lover's tiffs.
Lover's tiffs. We're talking lover's tiffs today, and I think that's probably been prompted by the behaviour of one Colonel Sherman Potter from Matt.
Oh, no.
He's 81, and he's gone the thump on the missus. Not funny in itself. I'm not saying that's funny. It's not funny. But it is funny when you read why. He's sitting around, he's going, he's apologised today. I'm ashamed, says Colonel Potter, is the headline in the paper. And says Harry Morgan, the actor, of course, 81 years old, best known as Colonel Potter from MASH. Unfortunately, this is the second time in a year the police have been called to our house because of drunken fights. Listen to what he says next. We were relaxing at home and started drinking. Life gets boring when you're used to being a TV star and have nothing to do. So life's so boring, you're on the telly, you're going, come over here and cop a knuckle sandwich. That doesn't sound like behaviour we can endorse.
So to break that cycle of boredom, you've got to go the punch.
Well, I don't think that's the go at all, and it's certainly not the kind of behaviour we're chasing on Love Machine today. We want you to call us up and tell us about your ridiculous reasons for your lover's tiffs. These are little tiffs you've had with the girlfriend, with the boyfriend, with the husband, with the wife. Call us up, tell us about the tiff, and the more ridiculous and petty and pissy the springboard for the tiff, the more chance you've got of going into the draw for that fabulous car. It's just, if I laid out all the rules correctly.
You've done all you can. It is now in the listener's court.
And no calls, please, Bob Geldof and Paulie Yates. Call us now, 1-800-657-657.
This is Martin Malloy.
Two men skilled at climbing a mountain. Ah, Jack, that'd be useful.
Brought to you by absolutely nobody.
must mean it's time to crank up the love machine here at Martin Malloy. And today we're talking about love gone wrong. We're talking about lovers' tiffs. The pissier the better. That's our motto today. Introduce the lovers. Let them tell us about the tiffs. Love doctor, Mick Malloy. Chris is going to be the first to let fly with the tiffs. Chris, how are you?
Not bad there, Tony and Martin. Mick, how are you?
Not too bad, mate. Now, tell us about it. Lay out the groundwork for us. What happened?
All right. Well, we like to recycle our shopping bags from the supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
We use them to line the rubbish bin. Of course, they don't fit. And there's this little gap between the bin and the bag, and I tend to drop the garbage down there.
Right. So when you say we're talking who?
My girlfriend Annette.
Right.
And she responds by taking the latest green guide, which I love to read, and I gotta have it close by, and lines the bottom of the budgie cage with it.
Oh dear. So it's a kind of bin liner-based tiff, really, isn't it?
Lover's tit for tat.
That's right.
Dear idea.
And how bad has this got? Has it ever ended in, not talking to each other for weeks? Has it ever ended in, breaking up proceedings, being threatened?
It can get pretty serious, but not that serious.
Right. Well, I suppose that's pretty much in Bob Geldof, Paulie Yates country.
Yeah, they'll be knocking down walls at that house very soon.
Bin trouble. We've had it at our place. I can say the same. Okay, thanks, Chris. Shelley, can you go any more petty than Chris?
Oh, well, I think so.
Yes.
We buy porky bits, which you buy in a packet,
mm-hmm.
and we buy them in bulk in a box of 20 because my husband and I both love them. And what you have to do is when you take a packet, you have to put your dollar in the jar. So that there's always money there to buy the next packet.
Of course, right. Porky Bits protocol.
Yes, of course. And of course, what we did was we got to the last packet and the jar only had $18 in it.
Oh,
somebody had cheated.
How many dollars were you short?
$1.
Oh, I see. So you've got a Porky Bits deficit round at your place.
Yes,
and what was the result?
Well, the result was we argued over the last packet.
Yeah.
I had it, then he had it, then I had it, then he had it, and then we both had it, and then it was torn.
Oh, no!
And then the dogs had it.
I see. So the dogs were the big winners. Very nice.
Yeah.
And Shelley, is this going to end up in court?
I don't think so, no.
I'm sure that'll be known as Porky Bits Gate.
But our problem is, you see, we live 85 kilometres from the nearest place where you can buy them.
Oh, dear, oh dear. And tell me, Shelley, without wanting to be rude, are you, you a pair of porkers?
No, we're not, actually.
Okay. Have you considered moving closer to the Porky Bits?
No. It has been considered.
All right. Take that advice from Mickey. You go to the Porky Bits. Don't let the Porky Bits have to come to you. Okay, Shelley, I think we've solved that one.
What was going on there?
Next, we've got Andrew. Andrew, tell us about your tiff.
Well, yeah, let me set the scene for you. I thought I'd take the woman out for a nice romantic date and sort of thing, and we ended up arguing about who loves each other more.
Oh, that old one! Yeah. Yes, I think that's what happened to Colonel Potter. Except he took it to an extreme.
Indeed.
So, and what did that end up in? How far did it go? Was it just, I love yous more now, I love yous more, I reckon I love yous more? Is it that kind of thing?
No, actually, I think a week later she dumped me, so, you know.
Oh, okay. So, in fact, she was lying.
Yeah, she was, yeah.
Be fair to say, you loved her more.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I won.
All right. Thanks, Andrew.
You'd do anything to win an argument, wouldn't you?
Of course.
Exactly. You should have dumped her while you had the chance. Okay, next we've got Pip. Are you there, Pip?
Yep.
Pip, what's going on around at your place?
Right, now my girlfriend was looking for her phone book, her phone address book one day.
Right.
And I was sitting in front of the television and couldn't be bothered getting up to help her, of course.
Yeah.
And so she chucked an absolute banana and started throwing things around the house and stormed out.
Oh, that's a tip. And how long has this been going on? How long has the relationship been going on first, Pip?
Oh, it's been good. It's been going for a year and a half. But I didn't know if it was going to end that day. She was pretty cross.
Oh, and it's been pretty smooth sailing until the phone book incident?
Oh, it had, yes.
And was the phone book found?
Yeah.
And was it placed down the back of someone's pants?
Yeah, back on the couch, actually.
And Pip, is everything back okay now?
Yeah, not too bad. Just got to watch out for the phone book, make sure it's around so she can find it when she needs it.
And what's she going to say when she finds out you've been telling the nation on Martin Malloy?
I don't know. I think she'll probably kill me.
Okay, well, that's certainly a lover's tiff.
What's her first name, Pip?
Rachel.
Rachel.
All right. Okay.
No more information than that. Otherwise, everyone will be looking her up in that phone book. I'm sure.
All right. Well, good luck to you, Pip and Rachel. Phone book arguments. We've had porky bits. We've had bin liners. Paul, can you go one better? Paul, are you with us, son? Are you there?
I'm with you, fellas.
There you are, Paul.
Mate, I'll tell you what, I was so embarrassed by this. I was at the drags, right?
At the drags.
At the drag racing?
Yeah, well, I'd go once a month with my girlfriend.
Gotcha.
And I thought I'd get her involved, you know, do the right thing. So I got her to set the car up a bit for me while I was going in, you know, registering and that for the day. And little did I know, but she pumped up my tyres to 46 pounds.
Oh, that's disgusting. Did she know what she was doing when she did that?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. So anyways, to cut a long story short, I'm at the starting line and I'm doing me burnout.
Right.
And of course, me front left tyre blows and end up nearly wiping out the damn Christmas tree.
Oh, no.
You know, I heard a very, I hear that it was for a very similar reason that Danny Minogue stopped going out with Julian McMahon. Tyre pressure, something like that. And Paul, what happened there? Were you not talking for a week, for a month, what?
Well, we patched things up, but, you know, I mean, it was just a tyre and a bit of... I didn't go after that. I didn't go to any more race meetings.
Oh, dear.
But, yeah, we patched it up. But
Did you have a bit of a kind of a stout on the side of the strip in front of others? Was it going on?
Idiot, 46 pounds. Nobody does that.
Well, I found out later when I checked the other tyre and, you know, and I subsequently questioned her on the matter. And she was, it was... I had me chance, guys, but I sort of let it slide.
Well, that's a tiff and a half, and they've all been beauties. But, Mickey, can we go past Shelley and the Porky Bits?
I don't think we can.
Shelley is our winner today. Are you there, Shell? Shell!
Yes?
How far are you from a cinema?
We're... 90K.
Oh, well, it's bound to be worth it because you're heading off to see Love and Other Catastrophes, the fabulous new Australian film, and you've also got the CD soundtrack. We'll get that to you. But listen to this. You've gone into the drawer for that fabulous Volkswagen Golf hatchback. We're drawing it in 3 weeks' time. It's worth 27 grand.
Oh, fantastic.
And thanks for playing today on The Love Machine. We'll be back with another machine ready to go, and I hope we've helped solve a few relationship problems today. Today on Martin Malloy. Thank you very much, Alanis Morissette. You learn here at Martin Malloy, and thanks very much to everybody who took part in the inaugural Love Machine. And our winner today, of course, was Shelley. Mm-hmm. And Shelley's from Goulburn, and telling us that story about the missing Porky Bits money. And, of course, wasn't Goulburn where George Savvas walked out of a prison in a blonde wig?
There's your answer, people. There's the missing dollar.
That's right. I understand George is into the Porky Bits. Didn't he actually go to jail in the first place for some kind of Porky Bits importation racket?
I think you might be right.
All right, but before we go, speaking of love machines, and I'm trying to think. Look, if you're going to be offended by tasteless gear, now's your chance to turn off. I'm trying to present this as tastefully as possible because it is a big story in the papers today. It's a warning on... what are being called erection injections? Penile injections used to cause, well, I think you know, can be dangerous and cause permanent impotence. And apparently there's been an increasing number of Australian men showing up at hospitals with a bit of a, well, how can I put this, a six-day protuberance. You know, basically, they've had, who was the person on Love Machine? Paul's girlfriend has been overinflating, shall we say. And tyre pressure has reached maximum. And
they got to day six and thought something has to be done.
But apparently this is going on all the time. This is a new medical phenomenon, isn't it, Nicky? I mean...
what do you do? You're firmed up for, what, a 5 or 6 day period, and it's non-stop.
That's right.
It's around the clock. So if you get up in the morning and go for a jog, people won't know whether you're trying to get fit or whether you're divining for water or something like that. If you go in the shops to get a carton of milk, you just got to tie a red flag to the end so people know that, you know,
No, Gracie, I'm not going to give you the cue for the Boss Skeggs music. We're just going to
see someone standing around at a party against a wall looking like one of those...
those Indonesian wood carvings. You're becoming someone. Get him to the hospital now.
No, Gracie, not yet.
There's one picture in the Guinness Book of Records I'm not looking forward to seeing.
What, you think they might have that bloke with the 52 cigars in his mouth upstairs?
And underneath the one bloke with a cigar in his pants he's had for 52 hours.
No, what Gracie, we're just going to hang out here for a while. What, the news coming out? No.
Can lie down without turning your bed into some kind of teepee arrangement.
Oh, I think we better, Gracie. It's turning into a...
It's turning into a
six-day problem itself, this segment. But it must be awkward. It must be a lot. I'm sorry. I know it's not funny. Again, I'm saying this. I know it's not funny, but they must be having a cack down the hospital when someone comes in on the crouch and says, Lance, for God's sake, Lance, the bastard! But anyway, thanks to our guest today, Dave Graney, and all our gladiators.
I just want to wear tracky necks again. Let me enjoy my tracksuit pants once more.
We'd also like to thank all our inaugural TIFF merchants, and we'll be back tomorrow with Joey Skaggs. Who is Joey Skaggs, you say? He is the world's leading engineer of elaborate media hoaxes. He's in the country working on something big, something deceptive, I'm guessing. He'll be in. He's quite a big name in the world of media hoaxes. He'll be talking to us tomorrow. And until then, if you can't say something intelligent, come talk to us.